This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Around the corner, ducks down, Ian Book, and we are all tied at 20.
Looney back to Hub for three.
Got it again!
That's a Big Ten Tournament Championship winner!
From 96.1 WSBT.
The Virginia Cavaliers are the national champions.
Here's Yohe with a steal, gives it up, and Johnson throws it down.
Fires, it's caught, touchdown, T.Y. Hilton.
The sports leader.
Jeffrey! Allow myself to introduce myself.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
We welcome you to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. On this Monday, March the 16th of 2020, Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat brought to you by our title sponsor, Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by Rossini's Pizza. Carry out your proud to bring home Lincoln Way East in Mishawaka, across from Beeger School and the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Well, just like I think a lot of people, we are working from our homes once again today and probably for the foreseeable future. I'm Darren Pritchett, WSBT Radio Sports Director, coming to you from my man cave as we get set to broadcast the program. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider, for the South Bend Tribune, probably in front of his grill or in his man cave. I'm probably right. One of those two.
And is close to the grill.
Okay. I don't think we all picked up your comments. You weren't talking right away. So go ahead and repeat that one more time.
I said I am in my home office,
okay,
which is close to the grill.
Okay, well, that's very, very important. Well,
yes.
good to be with you on this Monday. I know we had Golic and Wingo on this morning, as always, our morning show from ESPN Radio from 6 to 10. There's also a television version of that program, and today it was nothing but a graphic on the screen. They have started broadcasting their program from Mike Golic's basement. So everybody's doing things a little differently. A lot of radio shows have stopped broadcasting, which I think is really, really strange, at least a sports format. But we are here. We're ready to roll. And we might be doing this for a while. We'll have to see it. But we're following orders. I know President Trump today came out with some new standards, no more than 10 people together. That number has been dwindling. And that has caused, I think, professional sports to really get put on hold for the foreseeable future. We'll talk about that coming up in just a couple of moments. With not much going on in sports in terms of action on the field or the court or the ice, the NFL is moving forward with, I would call it, paper business, as today at noon was the deadline for NFL teams to name one of their players with that franchise tag, and then free agency basically started at noon today, even though the new NFL calendar year doesn't start until Wednesday. Teams are allowed to now negotiate with free agents, and Tom Brady is out there for anybody that would like to take a shot at him. The Bears are snooping around, apparently, at quarterbacks, but probably not the one you guys are hoping for if you're a Bears fan. And the Colts have made a big trade today. We'll talk about that coming up in just a couple of moments here on WSBT Radio. Also, coming up later on to the program, a homework assignment for Eric, Sean, and I. I asked everybody to come up with their 1 through 16 seeds for what would have been the 2020 NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. Now, there was a report that maybe they were going to come out with a bracket anyway, but the committee and the NCAA has decided against that, so there will be no bracket to even look at. So we have put together the Sports Beat bracket, and we will unveil what our 16-team NCAA tournament would look like if it was reality. So we'll have some fun with that coming up an hour from right now. We have rapid fire on the way and a whole lot more to get to. There's going to be a lot of football talk because football seems to be the one thing that's still providing some storylines right now. Although I did watch a live sporting event yesterday on FS1. The Pro Bowlers Tour World Championship was on in Las Vegas with no fans. So there was a little sports activity on TV yesterday. And two guys who don't use their thumb bowling were in the finals. That just, as an old school bowler, that just kind of still bothers me. But, hey, one of the greatest bowlers of all time doesn't put his thumb on the bowling ball, so I guess it's working out okay for him. All right, let's get started, Eric. And just, again, for a quick update, Center for Disease Control and Prevention, they came out with the recommendation earlier today that no more than 50 people together throughout the United States. As I mentioned, President Trump has now said no more than 10 individuals. So that has led to the shutting down, at least sitting in a restaurant or going to a bar. They're going to have the ability to have takeout at a restaurant, but you're not going to be able to sit now in a restaurant for a good amount of time. In fact, right now it's through the end of March, but I think we all realize that could extend more than likely. And Major League Baseball today says, well, the idea of starting 2 weeks late on April the 9th, that's not going to happen. So they have pushed it now back 8 more weeks before we could have an opening day. And that probably doesn't seem overly realistic at this time. Now the timeline would say 8 weeks is May 11th would be opening day for Major League Baseball. And again, this affects minor league baseball, the South Bend Cubs. Eric, there was a report today that some general managers of Major League Baseball feel like we may not start a Major League Baseball season until July. So with this type of information that these professional sports are putting out there about putting everything on hold, if you're not totally convinced about the seriousness of this whole situation, I hope this maybe changed your mind a little bit, because we're doing all the precautions across this country to try to prevent what Italy has gone through. We're basically 2 weeks behind Italy, from what I understand, Eric. And when businesses and schools and workplaces were shut down, a lot of people went out, ate, went to bars, had a good time, and all of a sudden that escalated because there was no social distancing. So hopefully here in America, we're doing the right things. We're learning from some of the mistakes that occurred elsewhere. And hopefully this will be something that works out for all of us and we can get back to normal very quickly. In fact, Mike Piazza, the former Mets and Dodgers catcher, Baseball Hall of Famer, lives in Italy, also has a place in Miami, has now come back to Miami. And the New York Post interviewed him because he had been living in Italy. And Piazza was quoted as saying, quote, "I just talked to a close friend over there. And what happened is that when they shut down the schools, initially at the end of February, the Italians made a big mistake. They were all going to the piazza and having lunch and drinks. And that was a big mistake because people had the virus and didn't know it and were passing it on and made the situation a lot worse. And now, obviously, the country is in a full lockdown. The biggest fear is the fear of the unknown, the fear of the darkness." So, end quote. That's something that Piazza told the New York Post, and maybe something we can learn from what happened over in Italy. So, Eric, there you go. There's a little coronavirus update. And again, it looks like, well, both of us love the game of baseball. I know a lot of our listeners love the game of baseball. Even if it's not listening to a game on the radio, watching on TV, maybe you go to a South Bend Cubs game or a Little League game, a high school game. It may be a while before we see America's pastime. But I guess the problem is you just don't know, because we just don't know how this is all going to transpire, how quickly this can be settled down so we can get back to regular lives. So it's really difficult for everyone. I know, just talking a little bit to the South Bend Cubs today, it's basically a little bit of a guessing game right now. We all just can't really make any decisions because we just don't know what the results of what we're doing now, how it's going to hopefully help slow down the spread of the coronavirus. It's a unique situation, to say the least.
Absolutely, and I'm looking forward to telling my great-grandchildren someday how strong we were as a country and how we overcame this.
No question. I know my daughter, Logan, celebrating her 18th birthday today, so happy birthday to Logan. And I saw a graphic today which kind of was unique, but if you have a son or a daughter that's about the age of my daughter, 18, those youngsters were being born in the shadows of 9/11, and now they're celebrating their 18th birthdays by, you know, going through a pandemic, something that we have not seen in our lifetime. So they've had some interesting bookends of their life so far, to say the least. Okay, well, NBA news today. Teams are bracing for now a mid-June return. There is talk that teams are looking for arena availability into August, maybe even into September, to complete the postseason. Now, how does that affect next year? Because they usually start in October. But the NBA likely will provide projections on three primary scenarios. A, the financial costs of shutting down the season, restarting with no fans in the arena, or playing playoff games with fans. Those losses will be reflected in next season's salary cap and the players' share of basketball-related income. Now, I saw today, from a Major League Baseball standpoint, you have to feel for the minor league players right now, because they're in a situation where they don't have the money in the bank, or at least most of them don't, that the major league players have. But it's not like, Eric, they can go out and get a full-time job knowing they're going to have to come back at some point to their jobs. Now, maybe there's a little more small clarity that it's going to be at least 8 weeks, so possibly they can get some part-time jobs. But I saw today the Rays were talking about giving the minor leaguers $800. That's not per month, but that's just kind of a fee to get them back from spring training, get them resettled, give them a little money. But that's not really... It's good. Don't get me wrong. It's better than nothing. But I thought at first, well, maybe that's per month or every 2 weeks, but that's just one lump sum. I don't know what other teams are going to do. I feel for minor leaguers, having been around them now for 5 years with the South Bend Cubs. You know, there's been already a big conversation about how much money these guys make and how little it is for the time they put in at the baseball field. The Blue Jays started a push to raise the salary of their players, and that's great, but it's still not like they're making a great amount of money. In fact, if you break it down, some of the guys that I'm around, I wonder if they make minimum wage when you factor in how long they're at the baseball field every day and how little that they make per month. So I feel for the minor leaguers. They are the ones that are really put in a tough bind. If this is happening in October, November, well, then their baseball season's over and they can possibly go get that job knowing they have until February before spring training starts, or in most cases for minor leaguers, March. But they're in a tough spot unless you're one of those bonus babies, a first, second round pick, or a kid out of high school that required a big, big amount of money to get them out of their commitment to college. Most of these guys don't have a lot of money coming straight from college, playing baseball. They work a little bit in the offseason. But they're the ones put in such a difficult spot. And with already being a debate about how little that the minor leaguers made, I wonder if this sparks another conversation, because I just don't see how these guys can win in this situation. If you start working a daily job, well, that's taking time away from your craft, working out, nutrition. But if you don't work, then where's the money going to come from to pay the bills? So it's a really, really odd situation. Hopefully a lot of them can stay with parents or friends, but I think the minor league baseball players, more than anybody, are put in a very difficult spot. And I'm not counting stadium employees. They are obviously taking a big hit as well. I don't want to forget them. But from a player standpoint, Eric, I just don't know what they're supposed to do in a situation like this.
All right. Well, I think, you know, there's bartenders and waitresses and people outside of sports that are saying the same thing. And you know, hopefully we can all band together and help each other. But yeah, that's, I mean, I don't know that this crisis will spark the debate about how little they're making at the minor league level. But it's certainly something that they should look at separately from the coronavirus issue. And, you know, not everybody can go to college and play and come into this at a later time. So there's a lot of money in Major League Baseball, and hopefully they will look to find a way to help these minor leaguers.
Yep. Hey, let's talk about a couple of things that are happening in the world of sports. The NFL today announced the NFL draft will proceed April 23rd through the 25th. It will be televised as always. Now, the public events surrounding the draft, which was to be held in Las Vegas, those obviously have been canceled. So it's going to be a very generic draft, but they are going to go through with the process. You're seeing pro days canceled. I think Clemson still had theirs. Ohio State, Michigan, I believe, Eric, have canceled their pro day. And it got me thinking today, and maybe this is a good reason to get Scott Wright on the program from DraftCountdown.com, but I'm just thinking, Eric, for individuals that did not work out at the combine due to an injury or their choice, or individuals that were not asked to go to the combine, how this could affect their draft standing, because it's pretty much across the board. In order to be considered, to be selected by an NFL team, every team wants the medicals of every player. And if you don't have the medicals of a player, probably more times than not, that player is going to be taken off the board. Now, if it's an elite prospect, hey, let's face it, they're probably going to maybe take a chance on that individual. But a marginal player, if there's no medicals on this player updated through this process, they're probably going to get taken off the board, Eric. So you wonder, is this going to affect a lot of those players? And maybe I should start the conversation by saying this. You look at a guy like Okora of Notre Dame or Kareem from Notre Dame, who didn't do everything at the NFL Combine. They were kind of relying on Pro Day in order to, I guess, take care of question marks that NFL teams had once they go through the full workouts. I wonder how much that could affect those players that did not do the things that teams were looking for at the combine. Again, some of it's because of injury, and those two are prime examples of two players coming off injury, but other players either didn't get the chance to go to the combine, or some waited for the pro day in order to show off their stuff.
Yeah, it's, I think a lot of it depends on if the draft itself will get delayed at some point, and then you think if the draft is going to get delayed, then will training camps get delayed? Will the season get delayed? But let's say that they're going to do the draft at the date that it's scheduled, which is April 23rd through 25th. They're just going to do it, make it a TV event, not have live crowd there. It's going to affect Colin, Kareem, and Okora, not in terms of if they get drafted, but probably when they get drafted. They won't have a chance to push themselves right up. I know Pro Football Focus did a recent kind of redraw of the Notre Dame prospects, and they have seven guys in the top 112, but Khalid Kareem has dropped in his standing with them because, again, he hasn't had a chance to show off what he can do. I think what it also may affect are the guys that weren't at the combine. No, most notably, Jameer Jones and Asmar Belol. Now, I don't think either of them are going to get drafted.
No.
But in terms of being a priority free agent, you know, maybe they don't get a chance to have that distinction. Although I would say this, there's lots of film on Belol and Jameer Jones from this year. Jameer played in the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl, too, which is a lower tier all-star game. And I think those experiences will help them. But for somebody, I would say the person that would probably miss pro day the most is Asmar, because Asmar probably would test really, really good and really, really well. I'm sorry. And I think that, that might open eyes to some people to say, you know what? He only played well for, he was only productive really for 1 year. He tested this well. I'm going to roll the dice with this guy, get him in camp, and maybe put him on a practice squad. So I would say those two probably, because, again, if Okora gets drafted in the second round or the third round, I'm not sure his life is going to be markedly different. Same with Collett. If he goes fourth round instead of second and third, at least he's got his opportunity, and he can play himself into a great second contract. But yeah, I mean, it's weird because some schools have already had their pro days. And, so it's, this is, we keep saying this is such uncharted territory in the picture changes every few minutes, it seems sure. like, in terms of what we're looking at, not only in society, but in sports. Or, you know, it's, you know, you're thinking, okay, well, you know, maybe Notre Dame could have a spring practice in June, and now it looks like that's kind of very far-fetched at this point. Maybe doing all these measures will change the picture back again to a more optimistic timeline.
Well, and also we have to keep in mind, too, a lot of NFL teams have pulled their scouts off the road. So it's not like it's going to be 32 teams with representatives at the pro day.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's something you can do via video, which I think is a possibility because, again, let's go back to the NFL Combine. For the first time, a couple of teams did not send their assistant coaches to Lucas Oil Stadium, and the Broncos were one, and I think the Saints were the other. I could be wrong on that. I'm trying to rack my brain as you were talking there to think of the other team, but they had their general managers there, the head coach was there, but the assistant stayed back. They were working on other things. Now, they could watch the combine through the NFL Network, which apparently was good enough, so that makes me believe, Eric, that possibly you could do something live via video that all the teams could tap into to watch, for example, the Kareems, the Accords, the Prides run the 40-yard dash at a Notre Dame Pro Day, and just the media and personnel just would not be there live. I know it's not best case, but I think that would be a pretty good way to go about it. And as I'm talking, I'm also remembering that during the football season, this might have been October, maybe it was November, Eric, possibly you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you might recall that Colin Kaepernick, the former 49er quarterback, they had set up a workout for him.
Oh, yeah.
And some things happened. There was confusion, and Kaepernick did his own thing, but there were NFL teams that weren't going to be there, but they were going to watch the workout via video stream. So that makes me believe that possibly the pro days can still happen, but just in a different capacity, but without anyone in attendance, but maybe you just have everything going on via video.
I think that's a compromise. I think that's the one thing Notre Dame hasn't canceled to my knowledge, that they haven't done that yet. And that certainly is a possibility. Again, are you breaking the rule of 10 people being in one place now? Because that's a
true
really new rule. So you would have more than 10 players there, and you'd have more than 10 people working that. So, but that may not be the case on April 1st. I mean, maybe that changes after a few days. I don't know.
One player on the field at a time.
New number. Yeah, you could have one player coming at a time, that's true. Yeah. I mean, we're going to be resourceful through this, and that's certainly a possibility. And I think that you can't. I mean, I think the people you want to see in person are the guys that you're spending a first or second round draft pick on. And I think that, you know, if you're talking about Chris Fink rerunning his 40 or Troy Pride rerunning his 40, I think that you can get that off of the video. And you could watch Asmar and Jameer work out on video. I think that's certainly possible to do that. And I think that's a good idea. Have them come in one or two at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have Brandon Wimbush throw passes to the wide receivers and sanitize the ball. And, you know, so I think that's possible. Again, we have to adapt. I mean, all businesses in the NFL is also part of that. So kind of like your idea. I think you should get credit for that.
Well, I'm sure many more people have thought of that along the line, because something's going to have to give, because if the NFL is going to keep moving along business as usual, and I have no problem with free agency opening, it's not like you have to have people traveling all over the place. And I think it's good for all of us sports fans. It does give us something to enjoy when we don't have any activity taking place on the field. So I think just watching the NFL Network most of the day while I was gathering information, getting the show ready, it's been fun to kind of think about other things than what we're dealing with in real life right now. So I'm glad to see the NFL draft is going to continue, at least for now, April 23rd through the 25th. Let me get to something else that popped up today, Eric, that I noticed on social media. And this does center around Notre Dame football. All recruiting right now has been put on hold in terms of kids visiting and coaches going out to visit players. There is some phone call texting that can be done. But, Eric, Devontae Smith is a cornerback from the state of Ohio, and he was interested in many schools, including Notre Dame. And according to reports, he was scheduled to visit Notre Dame within the next couple of weeks. Now, of course, he can't visit now due to the restrictions, but today he went ahead and verbally committed to Ohio State, his home state school. Was Devontae Smith high on Notre Dame's radar? Is this a big deal that he's already picked Ohio State and Notre Dame is out of the running?
Well, I think he was high on their board. He is a three-star prospect at this point, 30th at his position, which is cornerback. 6'185", LaSalle High School, public high school, or I'm sorry, not a public high school, Catholic High School in Cincinnati, which Notre Dame usually does well with that league in Cincinnati. I think he's a really good player, despite being a three-star. I think that's a reflection of, again, not a lot of evaluation, deep evaluations going on with certain players. And Ohio State's on fire right now. Bringing Kerry Combs back as a recruiter, Kerry was the one who recruited Devonta. Kerry used to coach in Cincinnati, was kind of a high school coaching legend and then was at Ohio State for a while and then was in pro football, came back. But I think, you know, there's going to be kids that just want to get this over with, and some of them want to make a final visit, and maybe it would have changed. Maybe they take that final visit in their opinion change, but you know, right now there's not going to be anything for at least a couple of months. He might have just said, I'm tired of having people call and text me. I'm just going to commit at this point. That's now, Notre Dame may get a bounce like that as well, you know.
Yeah, I was wondering if that could cause kids to get a little antsy and just pull the trigger much sooner than anticipated because, A, they don't want the offer to go away. If there's a school they really like, but they were just holding out, well, let me go look at here, let me go look at there, and all of a sudden that scholarship could be grabbed by somebody else. So I think it does put kids in a very interesting spot. Maybe it's not much difference than the norm, but just the inability to go search other places may cause kids to think twice about waiting.
I would agree with you. You know, I think the one that would be of most concern to the people that follow this all the time, you know, on as closely as Carter Carles does, is Will Shipley from North Carolina. He wants to take another trip to Notre Dame, and it's really, I think, come down to Clemson and Notre Dame. Would that Notre Dame visit put him over the top with the Irish, or would he just say, you know what, I was at Clemson, I really like them. Do I really want to wait a few months to go back up to the Notre Dame to finish this? And you're right about numbers. You know, the day before Devontae Smith committed to Ohio State, Jacqueline Johnson from St. Louis, a guy Notre Dame liked a lot but didn't have strong mutual interest for a while, committed to Ohio State. He's a defensive back, 6'1", 170. So, again, Devontae might have said, well, how many corners, how many defensive backs are they going to take in this class? I'm going to jump in here. So you have two good points there. And so, yeah, I think that there's other guys that are leaning, Notre Dame leans, a lot of those offensive linemen, who I think if visits shut down for a while, they may get a bounce with the offensive linemen.
Okay, very good. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. When we come back, busy day in the National Football League. The Colts have traded their first-round pick for an all-pro defender. All the details on that trade coming up next. And the Chicago Bears have kicked the tires on a veteran quarterback. Maybe they see him as a guy that can work alongside Mitchell Trubisky. We'll tell you who that player is coming up in just a couple of moments. We'll talk some NFL next on a busy, busy day in the pro game. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app.
96.1 WSBT Sports Center Update.
And this Sports Center Update brought to you by Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing. Contact Sean Stevens in South Bend or Bob Borlick in Walkerton. The NFL has decided to proceed with the NFL draft April 23rd through the 25th. There will be television coverage, but no public events surrounding the draft out in Las Vegas. Cornerback recruit Devontae Smith, an Ohio native, is committed to Ohio State. Smith had interest in Notre Dame and had a recruiting visit scheduled before the recruiting process was put on halt, due to the coronavirus pandemic. That's a look at your SportsCenter update from 96.1 WSBT. There are some other headlines, but we're going to cover those right now as we talk about what has happened today as free agency opened for the National Football League. At noon today, that was the deadline that teams could franchise tag a player, which keeps them as their property for 1 year at a rate. And no surprise, Dak Prescott, the Cowboys quarterback, was franchise tagged today by the Dallas Cowboys, which opens up wide receiver Amari Cooper. He's now on the free agent market. So players who are free agents can now be contacted by NFL teams as of noon today. And the new league year starts Wednesday, so the trades officially aren't announced until Wednesday. But boy, have we had some things happen today, including the Indianapolis Colts. Colts football, of course, heard right here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. The Colts pulled off a massive trade today, and it centers around Indianapolis trading away their first-round pick in 2020. That is the 13th overall selection in the upcoming draft. That pick was sent to the San Francisco 49ers, and Indianapolis has acquired a defensive tackle who is an all-pro, and he has been highly efficient since he was drafted 7th overall in 2016 out of the University of Oregon, and it is DeForest Buckner. DeForest Buckner is a defensive tackle, a part of that great San Francisco 49ers offensive line. He became available, as Eric Armstead was signed to a huge deal. They still have Dee Ford and Nick Bosa. Right now, along that defensive line, a lot of money is going to be spent on that defensive line. So the 49ers, due to the salary cap, started that recycle of the defensive line. They pick up the 13th overall pick from Indianapolis, and the Colts get a perennial Pro Bowl player in DeForest Buckner. So Buckner is 25 years old, Eric. He had 62 tackles, 7.5 sacks for the Niners this year, helping them to get to the Super Bowl. The year before, even more dominant, 67 tackles, and he collected 12 sacks from his defensive tackle spot. In 4 years in the National Football League, again, coming from the interior, 28 sacks so far for Buckner. Now, with this particular trade, the Colts reportedly have already inked Buckner to a new deal. Not quite sure of the length of the deal, but we do know the deal comes in at around $21 million a year, which makes him the second highest paid defensive tackle in the NFL behind the LA Rams' dominant player, Aaron Donald. So Indianapolis boosting up their defensive line. They get a Pro Bowl player in DeForest Buckner for the first round pick of the Colts, number 13 overall. So I think that tells you right there, Eric, that the Indianapolis Colts are not going to take a quarterback early on in the NFL draft. If it is, it's going to be not in the first round. Of course, they traded that. There was speculation maybe Indianapolis would be a team that would jump up into the top 10 to try to get one of the elite quarterbacks. That's not the case, but the NFL Network has been reporting throughout the day the Colts and former Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers, they have been in the midst of conversations. Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network at one stage this afternoon said the sides are talking, but there's a big difference in the money. Rivers asking a whole lot more than what the Colts might be willing to offer. So this is a unique situation. The Colts get a Pro Bowl defensive tackle for a first-round pick. Eric, I think it is great value. When you have a chance to get a young, in their prime, difference-making defensive tackle, that is well worth a first-round pick. You're not going to find a more productive player at number 13 overall than what the Colts are going to get with Buckner. And when you think about that 49er group, yeah, they had great defensive ends, Ford and Bosa coming off the edge, but Armstead, Buckner coming from the inside. We saw that, Eric, with Jerry Tillery. There's a great example of what he can do in the interior of the defensive line for Notre Dame a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I like the deal as well, especially because Buckner's been so durable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that he's missed a start since he's been in the league.
One start.
But one start, okay. And so extremely durable. You're already getting a player that's in his prime. I think there's some good defensive linemen out there. But again, even if you feel like, you know, when you're at 13, that's a slam dunk that guy's going to be a star, doesn't always work out that way. So I like the sure thing rather than somebody with a lot of potential. So I like the trade.
Well, the 49ers had to make the deal. You're going to be spending a lot of money on a guy like Bosa eventually once he is farther down the line out of that rookie contract. They gave a ton of money to Armstead. So it's a part of the shuffling of talent. You hate to trade him, but in order to free up some salary cap space, they make the move with Buckner. This is interesting. The Colts became the first team in NFL history to allow the opposition to complete at least 70% of their pass attempts two straight seasons. That's phenomenal. You got a guy in Justin Houston, a veteran pass rusher coming off the edge. He had 11 sacks last year. But you're going to need a little more help coming from the inside of that defensive line, and they hope that Buckner can do that. And he will turn 26 on Tuesday, so this is a guy definitely in his prime. And Chris Ballard, the GM of the Colts, at the Combine last month was quoted as saying, quote, "I'm always going to be obsessed with the defensive front. I just believe that's how you win, and that's how you have sustained success over time," end quote. 49ers proved that to be true. Their quick rise backed behind that great defensive line. And now the Colts have added what I think is one whale of a player to their football team to go along with Houston. Darius Leonard has been great couple of years in the league as a Pro Bowl linebacker for Indianapolis. They've got a really good offensive line in place. Costanza, their tackle, has been re-signed. They've got the former Heisman Trophy winner, of course, Quentin Nelson, locked up and ready to go a couple of more years in that rookie deal. So Colts in a unique situation, Eric, because look at the rest of the division right now. It seems like teams are retreating or they're doing things that could possibly not help them succeed in the very near future. You take a look at the Jacksonville Jaguars. They have traded several of their key defensive players for draft picks. So they appear to be ready to take a step back in order to rebuild once again. The Titans, who almost went to the Super Bowl, losing in the AFC Championship to Kansas City, they had a tough choice. Quarterback Ryan Tannehill, running back Derrick Henry. Only one franchise tag could be used. Well, we found out that Tannehill agreed to a four-year, $118 million contract extension, $62 million fully guaranteed, came on at midseason, took over for Marcus Mariota, and did a great job of handing the football off to Derrick Henry, to be quite frank. I mean, he took care of the football okay. NFL Comeback Player of the Year, had a passer rating of 117.5, which was the highest in the National Football League, 22 touchdowns, 6 interceptions in 12 games. So, you know, he completed 70% of his passes, but the Titans team was built around the running of Derrick Henry. Henry got the franchise tag, so he'll probably make around $12, $13 million per year. But that's a lot of money for what appeared to be a marginal quarterback who never worked out in Miami and did not start the first four games of the year. So that's a big risk, I would say, Eric, at this particular moment. And you look at Houston today, they traded one of their best players, if not their best player, wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins, the Pro Bowler, went to the Arizona Cardinals. and there were draft picks involved. But David Johnson, a running back for Arizona who has not been the same player the last couple of years after really breaking through, had an ACL, and that's what they got back. So it sounds like that Hopkins wanted to break the bank, but he had 3 years left on his deal. Houston wanted to get value. They did not get value on Clowney when they traded him to Seattle, so I guess they didn't want to wait too long. I will say this, Eric. I'm not saying I like the trade, but you get a second-round pick as part of the deal from Arizona, and what's one thing you can probably get in the second round of this draft and be a pretty good quality player? That's wide receiver. So if you're going to save money at the wide receiver position to use elsewhere on your football team, this is the right year maybe to trade Hopkins because you got all that wide receiver talent of every shape and size that's going to be available. I looked it up. Arizona has the eighth pick in the second round, so that's pick number 40. So even though you're not going to find a player the caliber of Hopkins, but you take the money you save with him, you put it elsewhere on the football team, plus you can at least find a replacement. I'm not saying identical, but chances are you're going to get a pretty good player if you go that route in the second round with a wide receiver.
I would agree with you. Yeah, that's the year to go after some of this young talent, and you can draft somebody probably in the fourth round and get a really good wide receiver. I'm not advocating that. Get one in the second, get one in the fourth, because that is a deep, deep shopping list.
All right, we're running a little short on time, but the Bears have inked Danny Trevathan to a six-year deal. According to Brad Biggs of the Chicago Tribune, it's really a three-year deal worth $21.25 million, and the Bears reportedly are looking for a veteran quarterback to go along with Trubisky. They are not interested in Teddy Bridgewater, apparently, which I think is a mistake. That's the route to go. But apparently Nick Foles is an option via trade with Jacksonville. The catch is John DeFilippo was the quarterback coach in Philadelphia when Foles won the Super Bowl with Philadelphia. DeFilippo is now the quarterback coach with the Chicago Bears. So could that be a reunion, and could that be a good reunion for Nick Foles? Just something to throw out there. We'll talk a little more NFL next hour. We'll step aside for a moment. My five question of the day is next from 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Aaron is going to do the My Five. Yes. And I am Wink Martindale for today. And if you don't know who he is, Google it. But here's the My Five question of the day. The top five NFL teams that should contact quarterback Tom Brady about joining their NFL team. We'll start with number five.
All right. This one's very unlikely. I just put the Chargers on there because you run out of teams. He is from California, San Francisco area to be specific, but Philip Rivers is gone, so the Chargers are in need of a quarterback. But not the greatest division to be in with Patrick Mahomes.
Four!
John Gruden and the Raiders, same problem. You're with Mahomes, but that would just be a fun combination. Gruden and Brady together. A young football team that still needs a boost. Not sure it's the right move for the Raiders, but they have been talked about as a team that's contacted Brady. So we'll see, but the Raiders come in at number four.
Okay.
Number three.
Buccaneers apparently have already called Tom Brady. They've got young wide receivers, Goodwin and Evans to throw to. You've got a quarterback-minded head coach there in Tampa Bay. So I'm going to put the Buccaneers at number three.
Number two.
Oh, why not? The Colts. They need a quarterback. The ultimate slapback after all the Josh McDaniels stuff when he was going to be the Colts head coach, went back to New England. They've got a great offensive line. Got to get some more wide receivers. They added their defense. The Colts would be a very interesting destination.
Number one.
It's still the Patriots. It just makes sense to stay there. You know the system. You've got to add some weapons, there's no doubt, but why not just wrap it all up where it began in New England? That's the My Five, and let's just go right to Eric Hansen. What's coming up?
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, We are having quite a day, aren't we? Tyler James is doing a football analysis on the players who really needed spring practice, the ones who will miss spring practice the most. And, of course, there are much more. I won't say much more because we're a four-page section, but I'll just say much more.
There won't be a 16-page tab tomorrow?
No, not tomorrow.
Very good. All right, Eric, good to
be here. We won't have an NIT tab.
That's right. All right, good to talk to you. We will do it again tomorrow. We're going to unveil our Sports Beat NCAA bracket in just a second. Eric, Sean, and I put our picks together. Results next, 6 o'clock, WSBT South Bend.
Welcome back to another hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Touchdown, Notre Dame! 70 yards, Book to Lindsey.
He gets it out to Leshesky for three.
Got it! He got it!
Caught for the win, Kyle Rudolph!
From 96.1 WSBT.
Justin Fisher heading for the touchdown, his sixth of the night.
The Washington Nationals are World Series champions.
And that's a South Bend Cup Midwest League Championship winner.
And the kick is good for the win. Pinheiro with a De Niro kick.
The sports leader.
And look who's coming up.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Styers.
Sports Beat continues for this Monday on 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app. Along with Sean Styers, I'm Darren Pritchett. We are broadcasting from our respective homes on this Monday, and it might be our workstation for some time now.
But, at this rate.
Yeah, we're pressing on, though. And again, the news of the day, well, or probably is a lot of things that fall into that category, but President Trump now says no more than 10 people should be together in the same room. That's down from, I guess, a couple of different numbers the last few days. And because of that, Major League Baseball is pushing back opening day even further. Originally, it was going to be March 26th. Then, due to the pandemic, they pushed it back a couple of weeks to April 9th. And now today, eight more weeks, so it sounds like May 11th would be the first time we could see baseball, and I don't know if that's even very realistic at this time. There were a couple of reports and stories today that some GMs of major league teams believe we may not start until July.
I saw that. That is just, man, it's, I mean, that is out there at this point, but, you know, we're all in this whole, you know, we're in this big boat together, so everyone's kind of got to pitch in and do their part. Nobody wants to see it come to that, but if it does, I mean, it's obviously out of anyone's control.
Yeah, no question. So we're in a holding pattern right now, although we did find out that the NFL draft will go on as planned today, April 23rd through the 25th. Of course, it's not going to be held in public out in Las Vegas as originally planned, but it will be on television. The draft will continue now. How this is going to affect a lot of players, because pro days are going by the wayside in a lot of places. Who knows how it's going to affect the guys that didn't go to the combine, who have not had a chance to impress teams, or as we talked about last hour, Kareem Okora, guys that could not do everything they wanted to do at the combine due to injuries. How does that affect them? So if they don't push back the draft, and unless you have a video session where the pro days are videotaped for the teams to watch, I'm just not sure how some of these guys are going to get a fair shake in this whole process. It's unfortunate. There's nothing you can do when you're injured. You don't want to go perform in the combine and not give your best, so you wait till pro day. Like Cole Kmet, for example, didn't want to do the bench press until he had more time to strengthen his shoulder coming off that collarbone injury. And now you may not have that opportunity if the pro days continue to get canceled.
Yeah, and I know the NFLPA, you know, they obviously ratified the CBA. They narrowly voted for it, but apparently the Players Association did want to push back the start of the league year, but the owners did not want to do that. And the league year starts this Wednesday. So I think everyone's kind of in an information gathering sort of mode right now. And I think it would have probably benefited everyone if the NFL, especially since they've already said, hey, we're not going to do the draft with everybody out there in Vegas like we were originally planning to, it will be on TV. But I think it would have benefited everyone if they would have just kind of taken a step back, continued to gather some information, maybe just delay the start of their year by a couple of weeks, because where we are right now, it's not looking like the OTAs and the mini camps and all that stuff are probably going to be able to go on as scheduled anyway.
Well, I hope you have a comfortable chair in your house. We might be doing this for a while.
That's right. To say the least. If it's any consolation, I flipped on, what is it, ESPN2, I guess it was, and Golic and Wingo are doing their show from home as well. They had just a big Golic and Wingo logo up on the screen this morning. And, of course, you hear it here on WSBT as well. But I saw that this morning. So they're doing their show from home as well. So, again, we're all in the same boat in this whole thing right now.
No question. No question whatsoever. Well, we don't have an NCAA tournament bracket because the tournament committee and the NCAA has decided not to release even a fun bracket just to see the 68 teams that were going to make the tournament. So I'm a little disappointed about that. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would have been neat to be able to do it. You know, I guess the downside to it was the selection committee would have still had a lot of work to do, and they would have either all had to video conference together to get it done or travel. And I guess maybe it would have just been a whole lot of work for nothing when it was all said and done.
I guess so. Well,
but for entertainment purposes, I still would have liked to see it.
So we decided over the weekend we are just going to have our own 16-team tournament. That was talked about as one of the alternatives before the tournament was canceled. The NCAA looked at possibly just doing 16 teams, one site, you play the games on top of each other, you're done in a weekend. I guess kind of like the NAIA does. It would be something similar to that. So,
yeah.
Sean, Eric, and I, we all put together a seeding system, 1 through 16. Of course, the number one in each of our picks is the number one overall seed in our opinion. And then team number 16 would be the fourth number four seed, and that's how our 16-team bracket would look. So I have added up all of our information, and okay. Are you ready for the unveiling of the Sports Beat 16-team NCAA men's basketball tournament?
I am ready. I've got my fingers ready to go. I'm going to type this out as you do it.
Okay, very good. I'm going to put it out on Twitter as well as we do this just for fun. So, again, Eric, Sean, and I put together our top 16 teams. It's basically the Sweet 16 is where we start the tournament at. So we will start downstate. Indianapolis Lucas Oil Stadium was going to host the Midwest Regional. And in the Sports Beat bracket, here is how things transpired. That is the home of the number one overall seed in the Sports Beat tournament. And that is what I think is fair to say probably would have been the Big 12 regular season champion, Kansas Jayhawks. In fact, they did win the championship. They probably were the favorite to win the tournament title, with Baylor being, of course, right there with them. But Kansas is the number one overall seed. And in their Sweet 16 matchup, they will take on a co-champion from the powerful Big Ten Conference, the Wisconsin Badgers, who won their final eight games to claim a share of the Big Ten title, along with Michigan State and Maryland. And I tell you what, Wisconsin did it with their leading scorer leaving the team. They regrouped, and Greg Gard did a great job keeping the Badgers rolling. In fact, they played better without their leading scorer. So our first Sports Beat matchup in the Sweet 16 from Indy, the number one seed, Kansas, taking on the 16 seed, Wisconsin. Any thoughts there?
I like that. I wasn't exactly sure how this was going to work. I think that's a great one right there. So that's essentially Kansas is the one seed. Wisconsin is a four seed. That they would have been a four
Correct.
Seed then, yeah, had they made the tournament. Yeah, I like it a lot. I think that's – I might have had Wisconsin up on the three line in mind, but like you said, you did kind of the aggregate of the three brackets that we did and sort of averaged them out and did the seeds, I assume, right?
I will tell you this. You had Wisconsin rated higher than anybody else.
Oh, okay.
They were among my 16 teams, but Eric did not have Wisconsin in his top 16. He had BYU as one of his teams.
Ooh,
so that's why Wisconsin, you had them higher than anybody else, and that's okay. Why Wisconsin fell back to the final spot in our bracket. All right.
I was just going to say, I think I put them higher because, you know, they had part of the Big Ten regular season championship. So toughest
okay,
conference in the country.
We will hear more from the Big Ten. Okay. The Sports Beat bracket, Midwest Regional, another Sweet 16 matchup. And that features the number 13 overall seed from the ACC, the Louisville Cardinals. And Louisville draws in their Sweet 16 matchup the pride of the Atlantic 10, our number 4 seed, the Dayton Flyers. So, Abi Toppin taking on the Louisville front line, which would be a fun matchup. So, the Midwest Regional, Kansas versus Wisconsin, Dayton against Louisville. So, that means Dayton would have had one of the number 1 seeds in our tournament if we'd have had the full 68 teams, but they got the 4th number 1 seed, so they're the number 4 overall seed in our draw.
Okay. And they're all funneling into the Midwest Regional there. Okay, man, that's a tough regional right there.
You think so?
I do think so. I mean, like you said, Dayton being what they are, I thought maybe they'd be on the opposite side of the bracket, but that's a tough road to hoe with those 4 teams right there, all in the Sweet 16 in one place.
Okay, you know what? I think I did this on the fly during the 5 o'clock hour, and I might have made a mistake because something's not right. Because Dayton should be not there. So
yeah, because if you've got Dayton a number 1 seed, then they would definitely they'd be the number 1 in one of the other regionals. Basically.
Yeah, I wrote that down incorrectly. So give me a second here. Okay,
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that.
I apologize. Again, Eric sent his in very late, so I was doing it during the 5 o'clock hour.
That's okay.
And mistakes happen. So, okay, I found the mistake.
Okay.
So we're going to have to start all over. Can you just restart this whole thing? All right. Poof! Here we go. Midwest Regional, Kansas and Wisconsin are the 1 in the 16 matchup. And then the other matchup is the 8 seed, Michigan State, taking on the 9 seed, Kentucky.
Ooh, okay.
So how about that?
That's still tough, but yeah. All right.
Well, Michigan State, I would say looking at the way we seeded things, we all had them in the same vicinity. Eric had them ranked the highest. I think Michigan State, I'm not sure they're the 8th best team left in the country at this point. They played better down the stretch. I you know what the problem is? I think they're not as powerful as they normally are. So I feel like they're not as good as they have been seeded in the past, but maybe I just need to forget about the past. And this team has gotten better as the season went on. They've got a playmaker in Cassius Winston who can make the big plays down the stretch. But I just never felt like Michigan State was one of the best 10 teams in the country watching them this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They haven't been, but as you said, Cassius Winston is as much as he is. Is meant. So, I mean, still you've got a Kentucky team that got better as the season went along. You've got the Kansas team that from start to finish was the most consistent team in the country. And then you've got the 2 best teams from the Big Ten there. That's still a pretty tough Sweet 16 set of matchups that you got there. But, I mean, by the time you get to the Sweet 16 and the way we're doing it, because, you know, we're assuming no upsets, basically. We're just taking the top 16 teams. So
correct. Yep.
It's going to be tough no matter what.
Yep. So sorry for my screw up. Kansas, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Kentucky. That is the Midwest Regional. And we'll pick these tomorrow. We'll continue on with this process. All right. The Midwest Regional lines up with the East Regional. So that means the winner of those regionals would have met in a national semifinal. The East Regional at Madison Square Garden this year in New York City, and that's where we find Dayton, the 4 seed, taking on the 13 seed Louisville. And in the other matchup in that regional, this is, I think, an intriguing matchup. It is the 12 seed, another Big Ten co-champion Maryland, taking on the 5 seed, the Creighton Blue Jays, who won a share of the Big East Championship. So you could argue the Big East and the Big Ten were the best conferences from top to bottom this year in college basketball. Yep. And you have co-champions of those two conferences meeting in one of our regional semifinals, Creighton and Maryland. So there you go. Dayton, Louisville, Creighton versus Maryland. What do you think of that bracket? Is it as difficult as the one we unveiled just a moment ago?
I don't think it's quite as daunting as the Midwest, but, you know, just because I think you have some teams that have traditionally not been powers, you know, we're probably not as impressed by them, but Dayton only has two losses, and both of them came in overtime. Creighton has been a very good team. You mentioned Maryland, one of the three best teams in the Big Ten, and then Louisville, a team that kind of faded a little bit the last couple of weeks, but was definitely one of the top three teams in the ACC all year. So another good regional that we've got there.
Okay, let's move along again. Eric, Sean, and I voted on this today. I've added up all the numbers, and this is what we have come up with in our 16-team NCAA tournament. The West Regional was going to be at the Staples Center in Los Angeles, and here's how things transpired there. Another number one seed goes to Gonzaga. They are the number two overall seed. All three of us had Gonzaga as the second best team in the tournament. And in a first round matchup, they will take on, from the Pac-12, the 15 seed, Oregon Ducks. So you've got Gonzaga and Oregon, two West Coast teams meeting in Los Angeles in a Sweet 16 matchup. And the other regional semifinal in our West bracket, it is, let's see here, I'm going to double check before I say this. It is the 10 seed. Okay. It is the Duke Blue Devils. And I did not move things around before I say the next name. Taking on the 7 seed, the Florida State Seminoles. You can meet in the regional semifinals from the same conference. So I left things alone.
Yeah.
So you've got Gonzaga versus Oregon and Florida State against Duke in our West Regional semifinals.
Another good one there. Gonzaga did not, I mean, well, they had 6 wins against quad one teams. They really feasted on quad three teams with 10 wins there, but they still only have 2 losses. I do think they're a really good team, and it's, you know, I think when you look at this, this would fit the Duke from year to year. You know, when you look at the regions that Duke ends up with in, this would seem to benefit Duke, I think, a little bit, just based on tradition.
Okay, well,
and matchups.
You know, Duke is just so uneven.
Yeah.
I just don't know what to expect. Now, I will say this. Florida State was the team that everybody had a little bit of a different opinion on between Eric, Sean, and I. I had Florida State as my 4th number one seed. I had Kansas, Gonzaga, okay, Baylor, and Florida State as my number ones, and then Dayton as my number 1-2 seed. Sean, you had Dayton as your 4th number one seed.
Right.
And Eric had Dayton as the 3rd overall seed. But Florida State, Eric had them 13th, so that dropped Florida State way down. I had Florida State 4th overall. You had them 5th, and Eric had them 13th. So Eric had little respect for the ACC this year.
So that's why
Florida State dropped all the way down again. I had them as a number one seed, as the 4th number one over Dayton, but Florida State number 7 in our bracket. What do you think about the difference in opinion on Florida State? I just think they're so good defensively. They're deep. And even though the ACC was down, they took care of business pretty well. The Indiana loss, that should not have happened. But otherwise, I thought they took care of business pretty well this year.
I agree about the depth. I agree about the athleticism. They're so big, so physical overall. You wonder how that depth comes into play once you get into the NCAA tournament, the way he plays 9 and 10 guys sometimes. If you would still do that, or if you would shorten your rotation just because of the importance of the games and that kind of thing. But I mean, they were a really good regular season team. One thing Florida State has not been is a postseason kind of team, a deep run in the NCAA tournament.
Okay, so the West Regional, the 2 seed Gonzaga versus the 15 seed Oregon. A lot of good guard play in that game. That would have been fun. Mm-hmm. And then the ACC rematch in the Sweet 16, Florida State and Duke. Final bracket in our Sports Beat tournament. It is the South Regional. That was going to be held at the Toyota Center in Houston, home of the Rockets. And Baylor gets to stay close to home. The 3 seed Baylor, they get one of the number 1 seeds, and they would have faced the 14 seed out of the Big East, the Seton Hall Pirates. The Pirates really struggled down the stretch, but they still stay in the top 16. And you and I had Seton Hall 13th overall. Eric had them 16th. And so Seton Hall falls into that 14th overall position in our tournament. And the final 2 teams into the field, it is the 11 seed, also from the Big East, another co-champion, the Villanova Wildcats. And they draw the 6 seed, the Aztecs of San Diego State. You and I had San Diego State as 8th overall. Eric had them as 5th, and they settle in the number 6 spot. So the South bracket, the 3 seed Baylor against the 14 seed Seton Hall. And then the 6-11 matchup is San Diego State against Villanova. What do you think?
Well, San Diego State had, just like Dayton, really a historic year for them, 30-2, but those 2 losses came at the end of the season. And I'm trying to think of who the second one, UNLV was who the second one was to, an unranked team. So they were getting, you know, they were kind of letting up a little bit at the wrong time of year. But, you know, Baylor, along with Kansas, probably the second most consistent team in the league, even though they got knocked off a couple of times down the stretch. Villanova, one of their biggest wins of the season was back in December against Kansas. I really have not known what to think of Seton Hall all year long. They've just not really able to figure them out, but they have 7 quad 1 wins. That says something against a strong Big East that includes the likes of Creighton and Villanova, yeah, who we've already talked about.
Okay, so again, Sean, Eric, and I, we added up our choices, and this is our bracket, the Midwest, Kansas against Wisconsin, and then Michigan State, Kentucky, in a great matchup of 8 overall versus 9 overall. In the East, Dayton gets one of the number 1 seeds. They would take on Louisville, and then Creighton versus Maryland in the other regional semifinal in the East. The West bracket, the 2 seed Gonzaga, that's number 2 overall, taking on Oregon, and then a 7-10 matchup of ACC teams, Florida State and Duke. And the South bracket, Baylor against Seton Hall, San Diego State against Villanova. To me, the weakest bracket by far is the South.
Yeah, I agree.
And the most difficult bracket, I'd probably have to say the Midwest. If Michigan State, Kentucky are playing at their best, that would be a pretty tough road for Kansas as the number 1 overall seed to have to play a team that's won 8 in a row in Wisconsin and then come back and play either Michigan State or Kentucky. That would be a tough road to the Final Four.
No, absolutely, because, again, Kentucky has gotten better as this season has gone along. I mean, they don't have the long 8-game winning streak, but I think they had like a 7-game winning streak snap before they lost to Tennessee. So they ended up winning like 8 of their last 9 or something like that. So that, I mean, that's to me, when you look at that region, would definitely be the toughest. And I agree with you that the South would be the easiest one to win, the one with Baylor, San Diego State, Villanova, and Seton Hall in it.
I feel like Steve Harvey hosting Miss America by screwing up that first bracket. Or the Oscars naming the wrong winner of the best picture. So
it's been a crazy 5 days and a crazy day, so you can be forgiven for that.
Yes, if folks knew what happened to me during the 3 o'clock hour, they would understand why I might be a little foggy right now.
That's right.
Oh, boy. All right, so we'll have some fun with that. In fact, if you follow us on Twitter, I'm going to start putting out the matchups, and we'll have you vote on it. My account is 961 SportsBeat. If you don't follow me, follow me on Twitter, and I'm sure Sean will be retweeting these. But we'll start sending out the matchups, and we'll just have some fun with the tournament. We'll see what our listeners think. We'll put out the Midwest bracket here in just a little bit. We'll vote on it, and then we'll come back tomorrow. We'll make our picks, and then we'll also let the listeners have a say in the matter. So we can't have a real March Madness, but we'll have some fun along the way with this, March Madness. It is now, wow, time flies here. It's already 6:30. Holy cow. We'll come back with rapid fire. We'll update you on a busy day in the NFL, all coming up from 96.1 WSBT and live on the SportsBeat app.
Rapid fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday SportsBeat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett.
All right, Darren, it's turned out to be a pretty busy day in terms of NFL news. I know you talked in the first hour about the trade that the Colts made to get San Francisco defensive tackle Brinson Buckner, but various reports have the Chicago Bears negotiating with free agent veteran quarterbacks Andy Dalton and Teddy Bridgewater, and then Ed Werder of ESPN says they might also be interested in a trade for Jaguars quarterback Nick Foles. So do you like any of those possible moves for Chicago?
Well, first I want to say the NFL Network has basically said the Bears aren't interested in Bridgewater. So
okay.
There's conflicting stories there. Bridgewater,
again, I don't get NFL Network, so.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, Bridgewater to me is the best choice because he gives you a starting quarterback. And I know the Bears front office is gung-ho that Trubisky is still their guy. They want to bring in a veteran player to back him up. But if you want to be a serious contender, Bridgewater is your best choice. Dalton doesn't exactly get me overly excited. He's a stopgap to me.
Yeah.
Would still be probably an upgrade over Trubisky at this point. But to me, Bridgewater is choice number one. Foles, I think, is interesting just from the standpoint that the Bears' new quarterback coach, DeFilippo, was Foles' quarterback coach with the Eagles when they won the Super Bowl. So there is a tie-in there. There's a relationship. Foles got injured right off the bat in week one for Jacksonville, never really got his footing back. The system doesn't really fit him there. The system they're using in Chicago fits him better. So if they're not interested in Bridgewater, if the NFL Network reports are correct, then to me the Bears going after Foles would make a whole lot of sense just knowing their system and his relationship with the quarterback coach. And obviously the head coach, Doug Peterson, and DeFilippo, the quarterback coach, got the most out of Nick Foles in that postseason run.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you talk about the system fitting him. They won a Super Bowl with him at quarterback in Philadelphia. And I pretty much agree with what you're saying. I think that the price for Bridgewater is going to be too high, and if you're going to pay what it's going to take to get Teddy Bridgewater, he's going to be your starting quarterback. I don't think it's going to be a competition with he and Trubisky, and you're pretty much saying you're done with Mitch Trubisky at that point. So that would make sense if the NFL network is saying that there is no interest in Teddy Bridgewater. The other moves would tend to make more sense where it is more of a competition. Like you said, the system didn't really seem to make sense for Foles in Jacksonville, and Gardner Minshew came in and he became the flavor of the minute, even though, you know, from a team standpoint, it didn't turn out that great for him. Andy Dalton, not bad. I mean, you definitely get a ton of experience. Really, when you look at the numbers that he and Trubisky have, they're really similar the last couple years. Dalton had 16 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. Trubisky, 17 and 10 last year. But Dalton didn't have A.J. Green either in Cincinnati. He was hurt all year. So I agree with what you're saying, though. Nick Foles would seem to make the most sense if they're really interested in, one, coming in, having somebody compete with Mitch Trubisky, and two, being serious about trying to move forward and try to win some games, because they still have a championship-level defense. It's a matter of what they can get offensively in terms of being a legitimate contender this year.
Really
okay.
Quick, before you go to your next one, a little piece of information. Chris Ryan, he is a television sports anchor over in Fort Wayne, the NBC affiliate, WPTA. He just tweeted out a moment ago that Bishop Dwanger's Griffin Eifert is going to join Notre Dame football as a preferred walk-on. He is the younger brother of former Notre Dame tight end Tyler Eifert. He's 6'1", 175. He's a wide receiver. He doesn't pop up on any of the recruiting sites other than just listing his height and his weight, and he's class of 2020. But the Eifert name back at Notre Dame, Griffin Eifert, the younger brother of Tyler, a preferred walk-on at the University of Notre Dame.
saw him not this past season, but two seasons ago. That would have been in 2018. They came over here and played Mishawaka on a really freezing night in 4A semi-state. And, of course, they went on and won the state championship the next week. But like you said, not nearly as big and rangy as Tyler Eifert, but a solid receiver with good hands who had a knack for being able to get open would be my quick impression of him. So, all right. So good news. The Eifert legacy going on, and he had another brother who played basketball for Purdue last year well. Okay, a tweet today from Associated Press college football writer Ralph Russo. I'm going to read it to you. I was shocked when I saw this. Here is what Ralph Russo from the Associated Press tweeted today. Local sports radio is going to be a wasteland of misinformation and half-baked public health takes as dudes who spend most of their time explaining why it's important to establish the run and get pressure with four now regurgitate news reports they're not reading past paragraph three. Beware. So, Darren, what do you think about that tweet from Ralph Russo from the Associated Press?
Maybe it's fair because we all have to sit through the agony of watching a newspaper do sports reports. So I guess it's payback to the world because I see some news people doing sports reports and the information is wrong. And I see it on Facebook. I see it on local TV. I'm like, well, all right, well, can't fix everything. So, yeah, that's just us returning to the favor, all the mistakes they make.
There you go. There you go. I mean, the irony to me is you've got this national AP writer who gets to sit up in his high castle, only has to write a couple things a week, and you know he does it by acting like he's some kind of embedded expert on all these different teams, and he just has to take snapshots. He doesn't have to produce content, do live content day after day, but he's fully willing to sit back and critique. And when he does work, you know, he gets to sit there, he gets to write it up, he can go back, proof it, edit it, do all this stuff, and, you know, again, he doesn't have to do anything in the moment, but, you know, critiquing now, because we're all in the same boat on this thing, you know, none of us like the fact that we're not going to have any sports that we've got to be talking about, but, you know, we're all in the same boat, and we're going to do our best, you know, so I'm just kind of surprised that someone like this would kind of buzz the tower and take a shot like this.
Let's keep in mind whose industry is dying and who is doing really well too.
There you go. There you go. But, you know, I guess maybe we could thank Russo for giving us at least a couple minute topic for today.
3 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Fill in the blank on this next one. Iona hiring Rick Pitino as its new basketball coach is blank.
Fascinating because you wondered who was going to take the plunge and bringing back a guy that has a laundry list that's pretty long, it feels like. You always wondered which team was going to make that big jump and bring Pitino back, and apparently it is Iona. I think it is an extremely interesting hire. Yeah, it comes with a lot of baggage, but I'm sure the Iona people, the fans, and the players probably don't care a whole lot about that. They've got an elite coach now running their program.
Yeah, they've got an elite coach. It's a Catholic university, and I mean they're just like everybody else. Essentially, they've placed winning ahead of any moral compass, I guess, that they might have when you consider Pitino's history. And I mean it gets pretty sordid when you go back to strippers and things that happened in the restroom of restaurants there in Louisville. Not to mention the FBI. Investigation. But I mean, there's no doubt he's a great coach, but I guess I was a little bit surprised, but it definitely puts Iona on the radar for a little bit. And when things get started up next season, people are going to talk about Iona because Rick Pitino is there more than they would have. So I guess they'll live with it.
Yep,
that's right. All right, that's rapid fire for tonight.
All right, that'll do it for that segment. SportsBeat continues on 6:43 at 96.1 WSBT and live on the SportsBeat app. Abby, thank you very much. SportsBeat continues. It is 6:48. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you. The NFL business is still rolling along. The Indianapolis Colts, on the first day that teams can talk to free agents, the franchise tags have all been handed out now. We're now moving toward the 2020 season. Indianapolis made a huge splash today as they traded their 2020 first-round pick, number 13 overall, to the San Francisco 49ers for defensive tackle DeForest Buckner. And Buckner, an all-pro, 25 years old, he'll turn 26 Tuesday, gets a brand-new contract, and we don't know how long the contract is, but it's $21 million a year, the second-highest-paid interior defensive lineman in the National Football League. And Buckner, helping the 49ers to make the Super Bowl, had 7.5 sacks this year. Last year, had 12 sacks, 4 years in the NFL, 28.5 sacks, the number 7 overall pick in the 2016 draft out of the University of Oregon. So that takes the Colts out of the quarterback derby, you would think, in the first round. And Buckner, an all-pro interior defensive lineman, joins Indianapolis. So what do you think of the value of the Colts trading pick number 13 overall to get a Pro Bowl interior defensive lineman?
Well, I saw in the article that ESPN.com had, Darren, that the Colts are the first team in NFL history to allow teams to complete at least 70% of their pass attempts in two straight seasons. So they had to get better getting pressure on the quarterback, and this is going to help them accomplish that. Buckner had 12 sacks 2 years ago. He had 7.5 this year. It was a little bit, not that he was a reserve. They had more depth because they had Dee Ford and did some different things up front. They had a lot more depth, I think, than a lot of defensive lines have in the NFL. So that was able to help them out quite a bit. They needed to get better. So, I mean, quarterbacks and pass rushers are two, that you know, prime things when it comes to the NFL draft. So the Colts feel like they've got some experience, and obviously they feel like it's well worth the number 13 overall pick. And I think I think this is going to go a long way to helping them because they've got some good stuff behind them in the linebacking core and that kind of thing. So they had to get to the quarterback, and this is going to help them do it.
So the Colts get Buckner for their defensive line, and the NFL Network has been talking throughout the day. The Colts have made contact with former Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers. He is a free agent. Now, he is an older player, 16 years in the NFL. He had some throws this year that made your, I guess, head spin a little bit. But also, he was on a football team where he was gunslinging a little bit, trying to lead them to victories. He went 0-6 in the AFC West last year. And Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network said the sides were a long way apart on the money. So it doesn't sound like anything is too close at this particular time. But with the first-round pick gone, it sure looks like the Colts will go the free agent route for their quarterback for 2020. I can't imagine Jacoby Brissett's going to be their choice for the first game of 2020. That's why they're looking around elsewhere. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater is going to cost you a lot. You mentioned Andy Dalton in the Bears conversation, Nick Foles. But to me, Philip Rivers is worth taking a shot. If you can get a two-year deal, I think that's a pretty good way to go with an offensive line that's really strong in front of him. Rivers needs a good offensive line in front of him, and the Chargers line was horrible last year.
No, there's no doubt about that. I know a lot of people feel like the Chargers underachieved last year, but I think you hit it on the head between the fact you had an aging quarterback and a not very good offensive line. You had a holdout at running back, all those different things. But I think Philip Rivers, you know, the interceptions are a key, or, you know, they're hard to overlook. But at the same time, you put him behind that Colts offensive line, and I think that's going to help quite a bit. You get if you get a healthy T.Y. Hilton, you can draft another receiver somewhere later in the draft to help out as well. I think that Philip Rivers would be an upgrade from the quarterback situation they had last year.
Well, there's a couple of more things I wanted to touch on with the NFL, including what's going on in Dallas, but we've had a lot of things happening today, and we'll push that off till tomorrow or maybe the Wednesday when you're back on the program. But I just saw Ian Rappaport tweet out the Dolphins are going to get Cowboys free agent cornerback Byron Jones, a massive deal for now the highest paid corner in the National Football League. So the Dolphins have 3 first-round picks. They're going to try to rebuild their roster, and they go get Byron Jones, who isn't much of a playmaker. He doesn't come up with many interceptions, but a very good defender. of wide receivers. So a lot of money for a guy that doesn't seem like he ever picks off many passes. You're a Cowboy fan. You can probably speak more to that.
Well, I think he's better than his numbers would indicate. They played a lot of Tampa too the last few years, you know, so I think it's kind of taken away a little bit. He's not going to be a true coverage guy, but at the same time, the Cowboys are just in a situation with between Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper, you've got Byron, and then they've got a list of about six other guys who they'd probably really like to be able to keep, but they just can't keep everybody. And because of the demand for him, they just weren't going to be able to sign him. And he got a big fat contract from the Dolphins as a result.
Well, Rappaport says, sounds like $17 million a year for Byron Jones to Miami.
There you go.
Wowzers.
There you go.
We'll take our final break. We'll wrap up Sports Beat next, 6:54 at WSBT. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Rossini's Pizza. Carry out, you're proud to bring home, Lincoln Way East in Mishawaka, across from Beeger School and the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Coming up on tomorrow's program, Brian Driscoll from Sports Illustrated will visit with us at 6:07. Tom Uziak from the Cubs Den will unveil his top seven prospects in the Chicago Cubs minor league system. That will come your way at 6:40. Sean, we'll talk to you on Wednesday.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good one tomorrow.
Have a great evening, everyone. It is 7 o'clock at 96.1 WSBT South Bend, the sports leader.